Welcome to Newsworthy with Norrisworthy. Get ready for some awesome.
Good evening. Welcome to Newsworthy with Norrisworthy. This is a Sunday evening, and we are going to be talking tonight about the intersection of physical wellness and spiritual wellness. And in light of this topic, I have brought in one of my friends, Sean Palmer, who is joining us today by the magic of Skype. So welcome, Sean, to Newsworthy Woo-hoo! With Norrisworthy.
The magic of Skype.
It's magical, isn't it?
If Skype is magical, then we're free and clear because we don't have to do anything for the next 25 minutes. People will already be experiencing something magical just through Skype.
I think you might be onto something. Well, Sean, you recently started a blog post series on your blog, which is The Palmer Perspective, talking about the intersection of spirituality and physical wellness. And so I thought you would be a great person to talk about this because these are two great interests of mine. And I think as we'll talk about this more, we will realize that it's actually one common interest, not necessarily two separate ones. But in your blog post, you start off by telling your and so why don't you start this off by telling us a little bit about your story?
Yeah, well, like for most people, I'm 39 years old, and like most folks who wake up one day and they're out of shape, they were probably in shape at one time. And, you know, I played sports when I was a kid and played baseball through high school, and slowly over time, college, young adulthood, you become less active, especially in ministry, where there's a lot, you do a lot of sitting, you do a lot of studying, you do a lot of reading. And I woke up one day and I was at a place physically where no one ever plans to be, and I didn't want to be. But for a long time, it just didn't bother me, to be quite frank about it. I felt fine. I felt like I had plenty of energy. But about 3 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, I started thinking about where it was I was exactly, because my father is diabetic. All my grandparents have died either from heart attack or cancer. And I wanted to have a long, fulfilling life. And a friend of ours in California was my spiritual director's wife. We were at lunch one day, and she's a doctor, she's a physician, and she was talking about folks who end up going to the doctor, and they go and they realize there's a lot of things that they could be doing better for their health, but they don't ever go, especially men, because they don't feel badly. And I didn't feel bad. But I decided on her advice to go ahead and go in. And it's one of those events, and some of us have had these experiences, where you get on the scale at the doctor's office and you know, hey, I'm not in the greatest shape of anybody in the world, but you get that feedback, that measurement looking you back, and your mouth almost falls open and you say, oh my goodness. And so yeah. My wife had been on her own fitness journey and was having really great results. And I'm sitting there with my doctor. This is the first time I've been to the doctor maybe in 5 or 6 years, other than, you know, I need some amoxicillin or something like that. And he just shot straight and said, look, this is what you're looking at. You're pre-diabetic. You've got high blood pressure, high cholesterol, hypertensive. Your wife's done a pretty good job. He says, do you think you could do, you know, could you lose 15 to 20 pounds in the next 3 months? And he says, if you don't think you can, then I'm just going to go ahead and put you on some meds today. And I didn't want to be on medicine. I want to be one of those guys that had like the 7-pill separated capsule thing you got to carry around with. And I said, and I'm pretty competitive and I like a good challenge. So I said, yeah, I mean, summer was coming up. I said, I'll do that. And there was a medically supervised program where we were living in California that you had to go to the doctor to get in anyway. And so he referred me to that program, and I got in it, and that conversation that day changed my life. I mean, that's been about 100 pounds ago, and all of the numbers that you consider important are down. Blood pressure's down, risk of diabetes down. You know, I just recently got new life insurance, and I qualified for the highest level, you know, the premium or whatever, because I was in such great physical shape. And so I don't know if I did that just so if I were to be in a car accident or something, my wife would get more money. I don't know, but...
I'm sure that's not the only thing she appreciates, but it's definitely one of them, I'm sure.
So, well, great. You can...
Well, tell me, what was the actual change in your life? What did you start doing diet-wise, exercise? What were the things that changed?
Well, initially I started this program that was pretty much all diet. I was at a place at that point for the first 3 or so months where I just thought I didn't have time to exercise. And all of the exercises outside of actually doing sports, I hated. So people were like, oh, let's go to this class or let's go run or get on the elliptical. And all that was just so boring. But what I started to do after 2 or 3 months with the diet change was just go and I started running. And that's where I started listening to a lot of podcasts. I figured I want to redeem this time. I'm sure if this podcast had been around then, this would have been the first one on my list.
That's what I like to hear. That's what I like to hear.
And so I just started. I started running, and it was that mix of nutrition and exercise. And when you start to see even meager results, that's such an encouragement to you. But I mean, there were some other things that went along with it. I mean, I knew that there was this physical side of just the human body of getting in better physical shape that would be beneficial to me. But I was actually more interested in the non-physical side.
Really?
I was more interested in feeling more confident. And everywhere I looked, the people that I admired, the people that I aspired to be like, I noticed that none of those people were obese. None of those people were overweight. When I'd go to places and I say, oh man, this is a man, this is a woman who I really think that has a lot to offer the world and God's using in powerful ways, or what they're doing is really impressive to me. I just noticed that with rare exception, that those people were not only not overweight, but when I heard more about their story, they were also committed to physical fitness, that they worked out every day, that was part of their rhythm of living. And I said, there's probably something to that. So there are physical benefits and emotional, psychological, business, ministry side effects to it as well. And that's what I was really more concerned with.
Really? That's a surprising thing, because I would assume most people would think of that as a secondary benefit to physical health. But you're going right in and saying that's one of the things that is most appealing to me. That's surprising to me.
Yeah, I had a good friend who was looking for a job. He was trying to get a job as a senior pastor in his denomination. And he was interviewing at churches. And he's a pretty big guy. He was bigger than I was then. And he told me on the phone call one night, he says, you know what? Like, I don't think I'm going to ever get one of these jobs, one of these congregations that he really coveted. He said, I don't think I'm ever going to get one of these jobs as long as I'm this heavy.
Yeah, and I actually heard a church tell me that their previous pastor had lost a lot of credibility with the church because of his body fat. And I would never think people would come out and say that, but it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. I don't think it's right, and I don't think it's good, but I think it's true, and I think it happens.
Yeah.
And I think it's unfortunate that it happens. I think maybe some churches because if it happens in churches, it happens in organizations of all kinds. I don't think that's good or right or true that happens, but I know that it does, because it communicates to some people, though not everybody, but it obviously communicates to enough people that this is a woman, this is a man that doesn't have their act together as much as we'd like. Now, I don't think that that's true.
No, I don't think so either. But you're right. That's actually what the elder from this church told me. He said that it's difficult to hear this guy talk about self-control and self-discipline when he appears to be someone who is not. And like you said, we both agree that that's not fair. I mean, I think there are plenty of things that affect someone's level of fitness that is not correlated to self-control and self-discipline. There are plenty of other mitigating factors.
Absolutely.
And we both agree on that, but we live in a shallow world.
Yeah.
There's a...
And this is, you know, I've got a group right now. I'm working with a group of guys now who are all preachers. And they're all overweight and trying to get in shape. And they realize some of these dynamics. And one of the things that we have to deal with right at the beginning was that there were two people. Like, they got together, your mom and your dad, and they had you. And
yes.
To a certain extent, you're only going to be able to do so much. You know, like, we're not all built like LeBron James. Like, we weren't born chiseled.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Like, he looked like a grown man at 17. And, like, that is an aspiration. That's a ridiculous aspiration for most people. Mm-hmm. But you can do the best with what you've got. And that doesn't mean that everyone's going to be 185 pounds and ripped, you know.
Yeah.
Some people, the best they're going to be able to do is 250 and love handles, and God loves them the same. Anyway.
You know? Yeah, you're exactly right. And I'm never going to be able to be as tall as you, so let's just get that out in the open. That's never going to happen. There was an interesting study that Gladwell references in the book Blink, in which I believe is based at the University of Iowa. But there was a study in which a group of students were given a five-second audio-less video clip of a teacher. And then they were asked to fill out a teacher evaluation form based on the five-second muted clip. And then they compared those evaluations from that five-second clip test group and then compared those to the actual students who sat in for the entire year. And the test scores results were exactly the same, which says something about our quick propensity to make snapshot decisions on people and their message, which does not surprise me about our industry as preachers, where we get on stage and people just look at us and listen to us talk. Obviously, that's not the entirety of our job or our position, but it's a big chunk of it. So it's no surprise that that sort of dynamic is heavily influenced in what we do.
Yeah. I think it's unfortunate. I just acknowledge it as a reality.
Yeah.
When I wrote that first post, I mentioned that in the first post, and there were a number of people who said, you know, I think you kind of missed the mark on that. But more than the people who said I missed the mark, because I never got so many private emails from that first post in the Life Abundance series.
Yeah.
Tons of people saying, like, about being judged about weight and competency, you're exactly right. And every one of those people who contacted me was a preacher.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. What are some of the other responses you've gotten from this Life Abundance series?
Well, a lot of folks said this is exactly what I needed to hear. I knew it was true, and I've been kind of dodging it. And that's the strongest reaction. It's like, you're right. This is exactly what I needed to hear, which I was happy about, because when my doctor told me all of that, like, that was exactly what I needed to hear.
Yeah.
Like, I needed to hear from a loving voice that say, like, this is the reality of where you are. And this is, like, this is where this path leads, and it's your choice to a certain extent to what you want to do with it.
Now, one of the other things you talk about in your blog post is Gnosticism, which I think is an interesting correlation to what we're doing here, because I was preaching on wellness once a few years ago, and it was a sermon based out of, I think it was Ecclesiastes 2, where, you know, the writer's talking about the importance of eat, drink, and be merry. There's nothing better you can do. And I preached an entire sermon on that. And afterwards, in my small group, one of the gentlemen in it said, "We need more Bible sermons." And I thought, What was that I just referenced? Is Ecclesiastes not in the Bible? And I said, well, what do you mean? And he talked about, you know, sin and the Holy Spirit. And he's just quoting Paul as if Paul is the only thing in the Bible. Because when you talk about nutrition or health or wellness or enjoying food and wine and drink, it's not Bible. Do you think that ties into what you're referring to about Gnosticism?
What I was going after with the post about Gnosticism was this idea that the material world doesn't matter, that it's only spiritual stuff. And what it sounds like is the guy that talked to you had decided which spiritual stuff was the most important spiritual stuff.
Yes.
Right? and so people do that all the time. So it's not all that shocking. But what we have done, and what you experienced there, and we've all experienced it, is, like, this is the canon of of what's really important in life.
Yeah.
Right. And to preach the Bible, to preach the gospel, means the repetition of these 5 or 10 things that a group of people have decided are the very most important, the very core. So because you can't find the word nutrition in the Bible, like, you know, like I don't, can't find this word for nutrition, or I can't find where Paul talks about getting in your target heart rate for 20 to 30 minutes, 3 times a week, you know, that's not in the Bible. And when it clearly is, I mean, when all of the passages about stewardship and all the passages about the way we treat our gifts, like those are spiritual issues, just the same. We treat our bodies worse than we treat anything else we own. We treat our bodies worse than our cars, than our houses. We treat our bodies worse than relationships we have, like with our spouses and with our kids. Like we will do almost anything with our bodies. And like when Paul says something like, don't go join your body with a prostitute, because there's a spiritual connection there. Like we don't think about whether or not we should join our bodies with this McDonald's cheeseburger that's going to kill us. Like that's going to linger in our intestines for the next 7 years. And if you need a absolute word for word command, for stewardship of things, then you're going to have a hard time. But if you can read your Bible holistically and say, oh yeah, from day one all the way through, I'm supposed to care for the things that God has given me, then that eliminates Gnosticism, because it's more than about what I believe or what I think. It's about what I actually do with what I have, what I see, touch, taste, and feel every day. And we don't apply those same categories. No one I know that is a decent father or mother applies Gnosticism to the care of their children. No one says, well, it's just all spiritual, so let's worry about our kids.
Yeah.
You know, let's not worry about feeding them or clothing them or taking care of them or making sure they get what they need.
You have this line in your blog post series that our response to obesity is humor. I don't think anyone responds to those other categories with humor. Like, oh, my house is falling down. That's just really funny. Let's make a joke about that. But when it's obesity, we can joke about that. Why do you think that is?
Yeah. I'm not really sure. I think part of it's because, to a certain extent, it's accepted in our culture. And so I think we just kind of joke about it, and we joke about overeating. We joke about having dessert first. I think I mentioned that. We treat people who are healthy almost with a level of disdain. Like, well, she's a vegetarian or he's a vegan or, you know, I had, someone, a very nice person, a very thoughtful person say to me just a couple of weeks ago, she's like, so are you done with all this now?
Like you've got to the point where you're just done with nutrition?
Yeah, like, so are you, like, isn't it going a little too far?
Yeah, it's an interesting subject for someone to talk about, because it isn't always received in the manner it was intended to be communicated. I once was in a class, and I tried to quote an Annie Lamont passage in which she was talking about the struggles it is for a middle-aged woman to wear a bathing suit at the beach in California surrounded by a bunch of 20-something-year-olds. And what I was trying to say, you know, it's not fair to compare ourselves to other people and blah, blah, blah. There's supposed to be grace and encouragement that, you know, we're all family and you don't have to compare yourself to 20-year-olds when you're, you know, 50 or 60. And all the response I got was, I'm never going to wear a bathing suit around Luke. As if what I was trying to say is, yes, I'm judging you because I am in my 20s and you're 50. It's just a really sensitive subject to talk about. And we can talk about it with humor, like you said, to talk about it up front. It seems that it leads to a lot of shame and embarrassment for people, because if you are overweight and you're not in good health, then you're thinking that everyone's looking at you, because it's one of those issues that is very forthright. I mean, if you're overweight, people can see that.
Yeah.
Whereas plenty of other issues are far more hidden.
Yeah. And so it's, you know, I don't think that everybody who is overweight is not a glutton. And there are some people who are in shape who are. So there might be some sin issue there, and there might not be. It is incredibly sensitive for women as in particular, I think much more so than men. And I want to always be sensitive to that and be aware of that. But, you know, when you go and work out, your primary reason for doing that is not how you're going to look with your shirt off. Like, there are a lot of people, I mean, and you know this from being around just fitness people, and there are so many of them who are like this, where it's really a looks like thing. And then there's the more people, I think, are more like, are concerned with feels like and am able to do.
Yeah.
Like, and when we talk about it, we've got to figure out ways to help people understand, like, we're not talking about what you look like.
Yeah.
We're talking about what you feel like and what you're able to do.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like, because a lot of people are in great shape in terms of their heart, their lungs, their metabolism, diseases that they're dealing with or not dealing with, who don't look like cover men or cover women. Like, they're not on the cover of Men's Health. And they're in great shape. And then there are some people who look like that who are in terrible shape. They're malnourished and other. So we've got to move away from what it looks like to what it feels like for the individual, because you do feel more confident. You do feel healthy. You do feel like you can go and you can do more. And just imagine a legion of Christians, if we all next year this time felt like we could do more.
Yeah.
Like, if we move from 12-hour-a-day energy to 16-hour-a-day energy and began to channel that. Like, I've been up, you know, it's late now. I don't know if your podcast listeners care, but it's 9:30 now. So I've been up since 4:30 this morning, and I've been going since 4:30 this morning. And I love that that's my life. Like, and when I go to sleep, I'll sleep like a rock. I'll wake up feeling great. I'll have plenty of energy to do things all day. And I mentioned in one of the posts, I can do more now. Like, I'm speaking more now. I'm writing more now because I have energy and clarity and focus that I didn't have before, because my body is not draining itself, just keeping the basic functions of my body going.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. I think it was 2 weeks ago, there's the guy that I work out with. He was walking in a church, and his wife was with him, and they were like two steps apart. And as you know, whenever a couple's walking in and they're not walking, you know something's not going right. And so she's like two steps behind him. And so he walks in the door, and she walks in, and she looks at me, and she goes, "Don't ever let him miss this many workouts in a row again."
Because he had been, mood, right?
He was in a junky mood, wasn't being really nice, which I do the same thing on occasion if I find myself not doing some of the things that just help me. Now, here's the quote from your first blog post from the Life Abundant series. You say this: "It's not just about pounds loss. My family life is better. My preaching and writing has never been more had more impact. My marriage is flourishing, and my schedule is full with speaking and writing commitments. I'm more useful to God because I have more energy, greater clarity, less shame, and more confidence." So how do we switch the conversation from how do I look better to how can I function better?
Well, I think part of it is that you just have to go in believing that. Like, one of the things that is very helpful is, like, I don't have to look like anything for anybody. You know, I've been married for 15 years. I have two beautiful girls.
You don't need more game now. It's bonus game at this point.
Exactly. Like, I'm not at the club. I don't have to do anything. You know? So it was never for me about looks like. It was always about what I wanted to accomplish.
Yeah.
And so even now, I'm in the middle of a workout, and here's the thing: I never want to work out. I never want to work out. And I remind myself of mottos 5 to 7 days a week for the rest of my life. I have these little mantras that I say to myself because I never want to work out. Like, people think that, oh, you work out all the time, so you must really like it. No, like, this is about what I'll accomplish. And, like, I think of weird, random things. I think of walking my daughters down the aisle should they choose to get married one day. I think of what I want my retirement to look like. I think of other things that I want to be able to, if I want to finish writing a book one day. So, and these are things, when I talk to people who have done them, they said, oh yeah, when I wrote my book, I was up at 5 in the morning, or I stayed up till 2 in the morning. Like, if you don't have energy to do that, then you can't do it. And then we have to talk about, how do you want to feel? Like, do you want to feel sluggish? And I don't know when it is, Luke, maybe you do, Because I do think you hit a tipping point where you've been working out for weeks or months, whatever, and then it clicks where your mood is not determined necessarily by your workout, but it regulates it. Like, you're just in a better mood the days you work out.
Yeah.
Like, you get up, you hit it, you sweat oxygen going to all of your body, and you just feel better. You feel better. I always like working out in the morning because I feel like, okay, I've done the hardest thing I'm going to do all day. Like, I can do anything the rest of the day because I've already done the hardest
thing. So that's
thing.
Interesting because I put mine, like, at the middle of the day because it's like a break, and I don't have to, like, use the same type of mental energy to work out as I do to ride or to do preacher stuff. And I use it kind of like as my reward. Like, if you get enough done, then you can go work out.
Okay.
That's how I think it. I just think writing sermons is a lot harder than working out to me.
Well, see, working out is a lot harder because I can sit down and write for days.
Yeah, because I know I go into my Sunday slump. Like, after I preach, I'm exhausted. I'm in, you know, a bad mood or whatever. And I've found that if I sit down on Sunday and watch two football games in a row, I might as well have drank a 40 and, like, had about six shots because I'm just, like, in a terrible spot. And so I found that even if I just go in my – I've got a garage gym set up. Even if I just go out there for, like, a quick little 20-minute workout, my mood is better. I feel better. I function better as a husband and a father. And I'm just in a better place than if I just sit down. But it's still hard to get the rewiring to understand physical health is really part of a holistic spiritual health.
Well, for me – and I've told people this before – exercise makes everything else I want to do possible. Like, just in the physical realm, like, obviously we do all things through God. Like, it makes everything else possible. It gives me the energy and focus and the clarity to do the other things that I want to do with and in my life. Nearly everybody thinks, you know, that you work out just so you can fit into something. You know, or that you can look like something. And you probably had this too, folks who come up to you and they want to lose 20 pounds for a wedding or for a college reunion. It's like, oh, what are you doing? I need to lose 20 pounds for a college reunion. Well, that's a looks like thing. Yeah. And talk to somebody else because I'm not in a looks like thing. I'm in a feels like and can do sort of thing.
Yeah, that's good stuff, man. Hey, any last words as we're about to wrap up?
No, thanks for inviting me.
We do appreciate your time, Sean. Thanks, man. Have a good one.
Thanks for checking out Newsworthy with Norsworthy. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. You are now adjourned.